Hello and welcome to another podcast with Jeff and Josh. I'm Josh in Raleigh, North Carolina, and you are?
Jeff in Northborough, Massachusetts.
And now that we have that settled, you'll notice I didn't call this the Hot Sheet podcast because the Hot Sheet's done for the year. This is just the Jeff and Josh podcast right now, accepting submissions for better names. Might not use them, but it's not the Hot Sheet podcast until next year. Either way, you're stuck with the two of us for the next however many minutes. Enjoy or don't. You'll have us both. In any case, this episode is a little different than we've been doing in the past. Last 2 weeks, we've kind of previewed the Fall League and can only preview the Fall League so much. This week, we are doing a little bit of reader mailbag. We got our chat functionality restored over the last couple of days. And on the site, we've been having a sporadic chat since it came back. So we decided we would take a few of the questions that had been asked of our readers and kind of break them down here. Jeff was so kind as to compile the list of questions from our readers. So I'll let him introduce the first question.
Sure. Thanks, Josh. Yeah. And there were a ton of questions. You can go over onto the site and, you know, read some of the explanations. I was in there. I know Josh was in there. JJ had a ton of different answers. You know, it went through everything from, I think, some minor league contract stuff to, you know, a wide variety of prospects across all different levels. So really pretty interesting. The first question I want to throw up here, though, is from Brett in Indiana. And he says, over the years, who are some heralded prospects you're most disappointed to have seen fail? For Brett, he says it's the Cubs left-handed pitcher, Carl Hamilton, a Chicago area kid who couldn't overcome arm injuries in his early 20s. BA did a lot to get me excited about Carl in the mid-1980s. So I can flip it back to you, Josh, if you have one in mind in particular that is somebody that fizzled out. Pitching prospect, hitting prospect. I don't think he specified in particular, but one that sort of burned you a little bit or maybe taught you a lesson.
You know, I don't know if I have anybody specifically because I've never been taught a lesson. I've never learned a lesson and I've never been wrong. Only half of that statement is true. I don't have any particular guy in mind, but when you asked me that, the name that came to mind, this was before I was really prospecting. I was more beat writing. So whether, you know, the player was good and a prospect or just good in the context of the Trenton Thunder didn't really matter. But Manny Benuelos with the Yankees from back in the day, he was, and a little bit this year, I think he made his Yankees debut this year. He was the guy for a while, you know, on top 100 list, near the top of top 10s, all sorts of things where, you know, you thought he was going to be the next guy. I remember taking a picture during a Yankees game that I was covering. I forget what the context was, but I think I saw it was Yogi Berra, Manny Benuelos, and I want to say Jeter, kind of all in the same general region. And I was like, past, present, and future of you know, Yankees greatness. And it's just kind of, and it turns out it didn't work out that way. There were some arm injury issues with him. There was also just, he wasn't as good as everyone expected. But he is the guy that one of the guys that, you know, I thought, you know, we'd be talking about a long while and it just didn't work out. He's made the big leagues. He's pitched in the big leagues sporadically over the last couple of years. But he's never, you know, lived up to anywhere near the hype. What about you, Jeff?
You know, it's funny. There's a few that sort of come to mind. And a lot of them for me are, you know, as a guy that grew up in New England, right outside of Pawtucket and, you know, went to a lot of Pawtucket Red Sox games. A lot of them are sort of Red Sox prospects that, like, stick in my mind. The first one that came to mind was like Lars Anderson, who had a ton of hype for, you know, a good period of time. And I think everyone thought, you know, this is going to be sort of the next Red Sox hitter that they develop that turns into, you know, a potential impact bat. I think they even held on to him in some trade negotiations at certain points in time. And it just never fully came to fruition. The other guy that I remember, and I don't know if I remember him correctly because I was young, so, you know, sort of forgive me with this one, but Dwayne Hosey was an outfielder with the Red Sox, like super speedy. I think he had a little bit of pop too. And I can just remember seeing him like in Pawtucket and thought he was going to be like awesome. And like I said, once again, I don't know how well I fully remember him as a player, because I think he was actually probably a little bit older when I finally did see him. But I feel like there were a few guys like that where just, you know, you see him and you're sort of younger and don't necessarily have the context or understanding of like what's going to make it work. And, you know, it was just different times. Those are two guys that kind of stick in my mind. I'd say the other one that probably irks me a little bit is like Jesus Montero. Mm-hmm. I thought Montero was going to be really good. I think that was around the time I was getting into like fantasy baseball. It was really highly rated. And I think I drafted him or stashed him and like with some expectation that he was going to be, you know, an impact guy for me for a bunch of years. It never happened. He was, it just never clicked, you know?
Well, you're just sending me all the way on a Wayback Machine with both those guys, not so much with Dwayne Hosey. But okay, so Lars Anderson obviously came through Trenton a lot of times when he was with Portland. And as I recall, he single-handedly knocked him out of playoff contention in one series. But he also gave one of the best answers to a question. No, that's not how I should phrase it. Best answers to a non-question that I've ever heard. There's a pet peeve among media and some fans who pay particular attention to the media where if I want to know about a performance, I'll say, hey, Jeff, tell me how you think you did out there last night, or tell me about that play. It's not a question. So Anderson hits some sort of big home run and a reporter says, hey man, talk about that home run you just hit. And Lars kind of thinks about it for a second and in his beautiful California accent says, well, what do you want to know? And it was like that was one of the funniest things I've ever heard, because it was perfect, because the guy didn't ask a question. He just asked him to talk about it. And Lars said, be more specific, please, in the friendliest Valley guy way I've ever heard. And then with Montero, obviously, he was super hyped coming through Trenton. Oh my goodness. We only got him for a short time in Trenton because of the injuries. I feel like it was only like 9 home games that he played before he had a thing where I think he caught a ball wrong and broke one of his fingers or something. And they was done the rest of the year. And then by the next year, he was in Scranton. But yeah, that's another one who fizzled. And one of my favorite things about him, though, is when he did get to the big leagues, his first 2 home runs were off of Jim Johnson of the Orioles, if I remember correctly. And they came on virtually identical pitches in terms of location, velocity, and like whatever pitch data we had at the time. They were almost the same pitch twice. And he hit them to the same spot twice, almost down to the seat in the stands, which is one of the coolest things I could ever think of. It's just like, you're going to throw me that pitch, I'm going to do this to it. And if you throw me that pitch again, I'm going to do the same thing to it again and just bombard these 3 people in whatever section of the Yankee Stadium right center field seats were there at the time. That was hilarious fun for me. All right, Jeff, now that one's done, what's the next question on the docket?
Sure. So this is one specifically for you, Josh, because it's one of your favorite players that isn't named Chorio. So this is from Bob in Pennsylvania. Bob says, BA snuck Andy Rodriguez into the back end of the top 100, but the way he's hit in AA and AAA and the best defensive catcher nod in his A-ball league list seems to suggest he maybe deserves to be quite a bit higher. What's the ceiling of the seemingly underrated breakout prospect? Josh, you have been banging the drum on Eni Rodriguez behind the scenes for quite a bit. So talk to me a little bit about this. And I think there's also sort of an element of the answer to this that's beyond Eni Rodriguez and really more about sort of the updates throughout the season and then sort of the dynamics of players graduating and guys coming back on that we think are top 100 prospects that certainly could rank a little bit higher. But
correct. Go off. Well, we'll start with that element of it. Yes, he did sneak onto the back of it, but the way we do this is if a guy graduates, and we should have one more graduation this year, that's Shea Langeliers of the A's. He's probably going to graduate sometime this week, and we'll get one more guy on there. But no matter who it is, they're going to go in at number 100. That's just how we do it. Unless it's a, and then when we do big re-ranks and shifts a couple times a year, that's when things change for, you know, or bigger changes. So you get, you got the guy on 100, no matter, I mean, if he comes out and after the draft, let's say a guy comes out after the draft and is not on the 100, he goes 70 for 70 with 70 bombs. Well, he's going on the 100 at number 100 when a guy graduates. So that's kind of just more of a process thing. But yeah, Andy has been a guy I've been really sounding the alarm on for a while. You know, Henry Davis gets a lot more of the hype in the Pirate system as catcher of the future, but Andy Rodriguez is the Pirates catcher of the future. If their catcher of the future is in Tarnal. And I've talked with our guy who's going to do the Pirates 30 for the handbook. And I said, you know, you want to be real careful how you do number one right now, which I believe on the website is Termar Johnson, their first rounder from this year's draft. I think Andy has a really strong case as the number one prospect in the Pirate system. He can hit. He can hit for power. And to be fair, I'll clarify this here. One of my bigger reservations with Pirates prospects who come through Greensboro is that Greensboro is extraordinarily hitter friendly. It's, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast before, I think. It's basically like Reading in the Eastern League, Asheville in the Carolina League, South Atlantic League, and other parks throughout the country who are super hitter friendly. There, I mean, you can lose a ball pretty easily in that ballpark. And guys who go off for big power numbers there, you have to check the splits. You have to. But, and I was a little concerned that Andy might have been the Greensboro Mirage. But he got to Double A and he didn't quit. And that's not the same. And then he got to Triple A. And in the very small sample, he hasn't quit. And so not only can he hit, he's a switch hitter. He can really catch. He can really throw. He's athletic. He can play positions around the infield. I think, you know, if we were just going to put guys on, like if a guy graduated and we were going to put the next guy at like 50 or whatever, if we did that degree of updates, well, A, we would all be driven mad, but B, he would have gone much higher than number 100. I think he's at number like 96 now since we've had enough graduations. Point being, I think he's in the upper tier of catching prospects in baseball right now, and I could make an argument that he's top two or three catching prospects in baseball. I think this is a star in the making. And it's a great job, again, a testament to the value of professional scouting. This nobody thought anything or anything much of Andy Rodriguez moving in the super three-way trade that was the Musgrove Mets Pirates deal when he went to from the Mets to the Pirates for Joey Lucchese. But here he is, someone on the backfield saw something and said, you know, maybe try to get this guy. Maybe he's undervalued. And he was. And the scout who got him or recommended him was correct so far. And he looks all the world like a steal and a top prospect in a really good, deep system. So that was a very long way of saying, questioner, you are correct. Andy is much better than the 96th best prospect in baseball, at least in my opinion. But before we go to the next question, we, Jeff, are going to take an ad break in 3, 2, now. And we are back. Jeff, read us the next question from your magical Google Doc that I lazily do not have up on my screen.
Ah, no problem. So this is from Bradley in Chicago. Says, we saw some prospects take huge jumps this year, like Jackson Churio. Josh's ears are ringing. Who are some of your candidates to make that kind of jump next year? I'm going to grab
you start first. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me jump on this one first, Josh. You know, I think number one, the expectation that anyone necessarily takes a Churio sort of jump from, we'll say, a known prospect sort of on the periphery of lists and that sort of thing, because he was number 10 on the Brewers list coming into the season for us. To make a jump to the top 10 overall in all of baseball, I think that sort of sizable jump rarely happens. We see that every few years. It's not a given every season. There's certainly some guys who sort of jump onto the back end of the top 100 and the progression's a little bit slower. But, you know, I think, you know, if you're looking at something like this, you're looking at somebody maybe like an Anthony Volpe in 2021 who took a pretty sizable jump from where he was. But it's usually not players that are totally off the radar. They have to be a little bit younger. So I think draftees are probably a really good place to maybe target some names here that could be potential breakouts, you know, if things sort of do shake out correctly. A couple names that sort of jumped out for me, I think just from like the college side of things, Brock Jones had a pretty good debut. I know that some of the scout feedback early has been pretty good. There's still some swing and miss issues, but he gets on base. There's power. There's center field defense. I think he's kind of interesting. I don't know if he's necessarily going to break out in that sort of, you know, way, shape, or form. Any guys for you, Josh, off the top of your head? You know, we can go sort of back and forth. I think there's a lot of guys maybe within the first round, like a Spencer Jones, someone like that. You could say that about, but you know, you study the complexes a little bit more than I do. And I know you have a couple of different names that you want to throw out there based on some good scout feedback.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a secret that Miguel Blaze with the Red Sox is a really talented prospect. He's a potential 5-tool player, and he's going to, I think he got to low A for a little bit this year. I might be wrong on that, but you know, he got some
He did not.
You're right. Right. He had a back injury
at the end of the season.
Yep. When I was doing the ACL and FCL top tens, the reviews on him were really loud. He was a slam dunk for number one. That was, you know, guy could play center field, hit for power, run, throw, do it all. I said 5-tool player. I listed all 5 tools. There you go. Just to prove that I know them. I'll just go to the number one for the ACL as well. That's Angel Janao with the Guardians. And, you know, if there's, well, their system is really, really, really good. I was going to say, if there's one thing the Guardians know, it's middle infielders. Well, they also know pitching. So they've got that. They know a lot of prospects, but they do have a glut of talented middle infielders. And Janao is in there with all of them. Those are my guys at that level. I mean, but you said it correctly, like, expecting anyone to take a Churio-esque jump. And frankly, he's not even the most absurd jump in the last couple of years. Ellie De La Cruz was known to only the hardest core of prospectors and Reds officials. And, you know, he wasn't Ellie De La Cruz until he matured over, you know, physically and became this 5-tool monster that bullied his way out of the ACL in 11 games. That's the most silly.
When you're drafting your fantasy team, do you ever wish you could do the same thing with your business team? If you're building a roster to win the league, you need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills. You can do that all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. Go where the talent is. 81% of U.S. online job seekers search for jobs on Indeed each month, according to ComScore. One of the things I love about Indeed is Instant Match. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Join over 3 million businesses worldwide using Indeed to hire great talent fast. Indeed knows that when you're doing everything for your company, you can't afford to overspend on hiring. Visit Indeed.com/Baseball America to start hiring now. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jump I've seen in a while. And both those guys are in the same realm of prospects. I could also pick another Guardians guy. I'll go with Chorio. Jason Chorio.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to make the same jump as his brother, but he's a really interesting prospect nonetheless as well. So this is a long way of Jeff and I both saying it's a lot to ask of a prospect, but when it comes right down to it, I'll be the guy who bets on the really young guys with loud tools.
Yeah.
And that's how, I'm not an evaluator in any way, shape or form, but if I were to be, you know, tools is where I place all my chips. I'm also not a gambler, so I'm creating a metaphor out of a lot of things I don't do.
I have a couple more names I'll throw out there. Joshua DePaula, or Josue DePaula,
yes,
from the Dodgers. More of a big body guy with power and some bat to ball skills. I would say necessarily like super tooled up, but I think he's still fairly athletic for the body style and like the video that I've seen, and I've watched a little bit of him. He's pretty interesting. He could be a guy that breaks out. Then I have two more draftees I'll throw out there, guys I saw in the Cape over the last couple of years. One in Chase Meadroff from the Red Sox. He went 129th overall. Shortstop, he's hit really well out of the draft. Bat to ball skills, great approach. Good base runner, really good just sort of instinctual ball player. It's just a matter of adding impact. And I think with pro organizations these days, that's something that more often than not, you can maybe bet on more so than other tools, really making tremendous leaps and bounds, just with some things that they can do. The other one is a guy who doesn't lack impact at all. That's Nathan Mortarelli, who was drafted a little bit further after Meadroff. Another California West Coast college kid, went to Cal, played with Katuit in 2021 here on the Cape. Big impact, a lot of power. I wrote about him actually in my article on Monday, looking at some of the exit velocity standouts post draft this summer. So can read a little bit about him. And I think he's a guy that, you know, kind of pairs impact, approach, and contact pretty well. So he could be interesting.
And for the listeners, who drafted him?
The Padres. Excuse me.
Cool. So yeah, that's kind of where we are on those guys. Jeff. I wanted to go back one second. Sure. You mentioned Josue DePaula. I was talking kind of to a scout about not necessarily him in general, but I brought his name up, and I said, "Oh, so we like this guy." He said, "Okay, who's he with? Dodgers." Is he a left-hander? Yes. Shakes the head. Apparently, the Dodgers do well with a lot of guys, but it seems like they do all really well with left-handers, especially. And DePaula seems to be another guy in that line. Now, Jeff/Vanna White. Vanna White doesn't read questions. The next question, please.
No problem. Yeah, if Vanna White did. I'm sure it would be a very similar voice to mine. Michael Bay Area from the Bay Area. It was a brutal year for many of the Giants' top prospects, aside from Harrison and Luciano. That's not too bad. Matos, Palmeiras, Ramos, Bednar, Mikulski, Bishop, Bailey all had varying degrees of bad years. Do you think the Giants have a player development issue? Brown, McRae, and Schmidt are great stories, but all those struggles are concerning. Josh, you cover the Giants, so...
And I answered this question in the chat, so I will rehash my answer there. I don't think there's a common thread that ties, outside of who their employer is, the guys who have had down years in that system. Bednar and Mikulski, both early on from spring training, didn't look like the same guys who were drafted as high as they were. I mean, those were the two first guys I saw off the plane this year in spring training, and their stuff was both very vanilla, you know, or worse. I'm not sure what's worse than vanilla. I love vanilla, but anyway, those two guys were, you know, just not as advertised, and I don't know what happened there, if their stuff just backed up, but there was very little the player development staff could have done to avoid that backup that they didn't see coming. With Patrick Bailey and Hunter Bishop, there were offensive questions about both those guys coming out of the draft. And they manifested themselves, you know, and also Bishop has dealt with some injuries and COVID and things like that. But the offensive questions that they had as amateurs have shown up in spades as pros. Matos, you know, he had a fantastic year in 2021. But there was question, or there were questions about how well his very aggressive approach was going to play going forward. And it didn't play very well. And they tried to get him to take more pitches and work deeper into counts. And he kind of got stuck between two approaches. And the result was a lot of weak contact and just a bad year until very late in the season. He's one of the guys I'm most excited to see in the fall league. But kind of this is all this is to say is I don't think there's a major player development issue because they're not all failing for the same reason. And then you did give the other side of the coin where guys like Vaughn Brown, that's a great success, scouting success story. We were a little later on him just because, you know, he is 24 years old and he was beating up on low A guys and high A guys at much older than the level. And then he got to Richmond and did it against more age appropriate people. So now, you know, it looks more real than, or it's easier to believe that Vaughn Brown might be one of the best prospects in their system now that he's playing against competition his own age. Grant McCray was always a toolsy guy. You know, Kyle Glazer kind of highlighted him in spring training. Scouts talked about him early. You, Jeff in Northboro, talked about him in some of your FAB articles. That's fantasy auction something article. I don't know. I'm not good at fantasy articles, but he's popped up a lot. He's toolsy as all heck. The hit tool needs still a little more refinement. He got to Eugene by the end of the season. But there are guys who are success stories in that system who weren't as high profile. So I don't know if they have a player development program problem. You can't really say that without looking at the successes too. That's a long way of saying, no, I really don't think they have any one particular player development problem. Jeff, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no. I mean, I obviously don't see much of the Giants system. I did have a series with Richmond this year. And, you know, for me, it was more, I think we've seen Casey Schmidt take positive strides towards sort of refining the areas that he needed to refine. Kyle Harrison, from what he is to what he's been able to do at the age that he's at, I think that's a really good sign. And I felt that, you know, though there might have been some down seasons on the Eugene squad, overall, the team performed well. They won a title, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, I thought there were some interesting arms, you know, within that pitching staff. I know Carson Seymour is someone that they acquired, but I thought he was really good. Mason Black, I thought at times showed a little bit of something. So, you know, all was not lost. And I think that the other thing sometimes too is as your players are challenged to maybe try different things, there's maybe some steps backward to sort of take a few steps forward. So it could be one of those scenarios. I really don't want to write off the Giants and the organization because they've done well to acquire a fair amount of talent. And I think some of the guys that they've sent out of the organization have been the right calls. So, I'm sort of on the fence with this one. You obviously work a lot closer and are much better sourced from the Giants side of things, but sort of just with the organizations that I get to watch, because I see a lot of Vancouver, Eugene, that team wasn't so bad. I thought there were a lot of, potential future major leaguers, even if they're not necessarily at the quality or level of role that maybe some fans expected at, you know, draft time or when a particular player signed. But that said, Josh, we have one last question here on the podcast, and it is a Cuero marathon mania. A Cuero-thon. That's good.
A Cuero query.
If
a quorum of Cueros.
Yes, it comes from Darren in Madison, Wisconsin. Go Badgers.
He is in our BADL fantasy league.
Yes, he is. He says Jefferson Cuero and Edgar Cuero, no relation. Jefferson is from Venezuela Edgar is from Cuba. Just want to state that ahead of time. Were teenage catchers with breakout seasons, do both project to remain catching going forward? And which one is closer to becoming a top 100 prospect? Josh.
Jeff.
I want to send it over to you and ask you a little bit about Jefferson Cuero, because you've seen him a bit, and I have not seen Edgar Cuero in person, but I have watched quite a bit of him, and he's somebody that's been on my radar all season long just based on some of the plate skills and underlying data. So talk to me a little bit about Jefferson.
Well, here's the funny thing. I answered this question in chat.
You did.
And I think in my infinite wisdom, I said, well, I'll answer about Cuero. And I didn't specify which one, because
it wasn't technically wrong.
No, it could have been, but the Brewers Cuero was a guy I was really high on entering the season based on some big noise he was making in the Arizona backfields. He was one of my breakout picks of the year. Turns out, right club, maybe not to sell Cuero's season short, but I picked the wrong guy from that club. But in any case. He's got an interesting blend of skills. He dealt with a little bit of a finger injury this year that he played through, but he's a solid catcher. He's got a little bit of mechanical stuff to work on there. He's a great leader, bilingual, as far as I've heard and read. There's some offensive skills there. The power is going to need to come a little bit more, but he's a guy who, you know, could be an everyday catcher in the big leagues, maybe not a star, but an everyday catcher in the big leagues who could handle a staff. There's a question about the staff he handled in Carolina this year wasn't the most velocity heavy. So there's a little questions about that going forward, but he's got the makings of a really good player. So I don't know how close he is to the top 100. There's really no, like, if you were to hack BA's various spreadsheets, you wouldn't find any lists of the next guy on. You'd need to hack our Slack and sift through our various arguments about this guy and that guy. Like, the arguments about who's going to fill that Langelier spot once he graduates are ferocious and fevered and fervent and last for days. But there is no, I couldn't definitively tell you who's closer. Now, Jeff, tell me about Edgar Cuero.
Yeah, and I'm just going off of some of the numbers I have by watching, and then also the source notes that we've got a lot of the work from Kyle Glazer, who has Angels coverage in season. But big thing with him is really advanced plate skills. Contact bat to ball skill is plus. This is an, you know, near 80% sort of neighborhood contact guy. Really low chase rate, low 20s, you know, high teens, sort of never expands the zone unless necessary. You know, the power year over year, he's shown gains in his exit velocity data. The scouts are backing that as well. He's really getting to more impact earlier than a lot of them had anticipated. I think one of the big questions is really, you know, what's the defense going to be? It's been getting better. He's still just 19. And I think that's the other thing probably with Jefferson Cuero is when someone's this young, it's really hard to sort of pick out, like, you know, is this guy physically and, you know, number one, going to stay healthy enough to catch every day, because it is a rigorous position. But also pick up all the little things along the way that catchers need to sort of have in order to handle a pitching staff and, you know, do the things that you have to do in game to really execute at a high level at that position. But I think overall the feedback has been that he can catch, he should stick behind there. But, you know, sort of an average-ish arm, but no major concerns in terms of the receiving or anything back there. And he has a really nice play profile. So I think as an offensive player, not all that different probably from where maybe Gabriel Martinez was a few years ago in the Midwest League, where a contact guy with good approach and maybe had shown some flashes of power a little bit earlier than people had expected. And, you know, obviously Moreno's defense has gone, you know, to another level. So, you know, I think, you know, Cuero is a really good one and a guy that I think potentially could be in the top 100, certainly has been in the top 100 discussions of late.
So on July 24th, I tweeted, yes, that at that point, Jackson Cuero was one of two teenagers in the minor leagues who were hitting 300 with 20 plus doubles and 10 plus home runs. Well, Chorio went to AA and hit the skids a little bit and didn't finish this year hitting 300. But that statement is still true regarding Cuero. He is one of two teenagers who are in the minor leagues who finished the year with averages better than 300, more than 20 doubles and more than 10 home runs. The other being Davison De Los Santos of the Diamondbacks, who got to AA by season's end. There's a lot of difference between those two players, but also it's pretty interesting to note that Cuero, 91 strikeouts, 73 walks. So his on base this year, if I can click correctly, was 435. The 312, 435, 530 as a catcher in low A. That's pretty special. I don't know if he's how close he is to the top 100, like I just explained, but he looks like a really good player and a really good piece of an Angel system that's trying to rise from the ashes in Phoenix, where their general minor league complex is held. That's a very specific joke, and I'm making air quotes there. Point is, yes. Edgar Cuero and Jefferson Cuero are pretty interesting, similarly named, unrelated catchers in the minor leagues. And that's our five questions for today. Next time I talk to you, it'll probably be recording from a hotel room somewhere in Mesa, Arizona, and Jeff will continue to be in Northborough, Massachusetts, like a fool.
Until November.
Until November, when he heads out to the same area of the Fall League. Anything you want to add as a closing thought, Jeff?
Yeah, no. A lot of good content coming out this week. I did a couple of sort of check-ins early this week on Monday and Tuesday. One on the hitting side, one on the pitching side with 2022 draftees. Looking a little bit less at baseball card stats and performance. Carlos will follow up with something like that. It's looking a little bit deeper into some of the performers. It's really just looking at guys that maybe, were hitting for power, showing some returns early based on source data and feedback I had gotten from folks. I think the spin rate one and looking at some interesting breaking balls and fastballs and arms, I think there could be some big potential breakouts next year in that one. So take a look at that. I have a few other things coming out this week, some fall league stuff too. And I'm jealous of your upcoming looks, but there you go.
There's not a whole lot of reason to be jealous of me, but that's one of them. I will say I wrote the story on the minor league player of the year, which you will all find out the winner, I believe, tomorrow at the close of the minor league season. But there's some pretty obvious candidates, and I don't think anybody's going to be surprised who it is. I also wrote a shorter case for another guy who had a case as the minor league player of the year. I don't know when that's coming out, but I think it's later this week. And then I think I'll have a thing about X number of guys in the fall league who could break out. And then it's also just grinding away on top 30s. It's the Easter up in the issue after this one. And I've got the Yankees and the Marlins grinding away on those calls. And I'll close by saying, to all our friends who are in Florida right now, stay safe as this hurricane approaches. And for Jeff in Massachusetts, I'm Josh in North Carolina, saying thanks for the listen. Bye.